Blog Talk Radio.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest spring, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil.
Internet world, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule today to join me on the broadcast. Today, for the next hour on our broadcast, The Cross in the Desert, it's going to be my pleasure to interview a very dear friend, Ani Cyrus, who has been a guest on my program several times in the past, but she is delightful, she is passionate, she is committed to our country's freedoms, more so than any other country in the world. Ani is from Iran. She has lived here for 18 years, and in the last several years, she has mounted a campaign to talk about her life in Iran, being abused as a child bride. She talks about the dangers of Sharia law because, as an American citizen, as an Iranian American citizen, she is watching in horror and unbelief as the Islamic worldview is taking such a stranglehold on people here in our country. And now we have two Muslim women in Congress that are raising their voices in support of Palestine, in support of Sharia law. They're saying things against Israel. This is a dangerous situation, and Ani is going to give her perspective on all of that this morning. She is the director of American Truth Project, and so Ani has a way of getting the news to us through all the filters, getting us the straight news, the way it needs to be understood. Ani has worked very closely with her dear friend Jamie Glassoff, producing the Glassoff Gang, for many, many years. And on that program, you will see her episodes of something called The Unknown, where she shares her life in Iran and exactly what happened. Recently, she has started another project with AccuNews. and she has a website called Live Up to Freedom. So there are so many things that Ani is involved in, and I cannot wait to talk to her for the next hour. She is going to share with us her expertise on Sharia law, but most importantly, what you and I can do to fight for our freedoms here in the United States, because that's what this is all about. That's why she works day and night with her website and her program. I want to welcome right now to The Cross in the Desert my very dear friend and special guest, producer, editor of The Glass Off Gang and The Unknown, national director of the American Truth Project, and a human rights activist for women abused by Sharia law. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, Ani Cyrus. Thank you for coming.
Always a pleasure, Randy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Ani, before you came on, I was going down a list of the things that you are currently involved in. And it's quite a list because you work tirelessly to educate us here about the dangers of Sharia law. And I've talked about the fact that you're the director of the American Truth Project to get us the right news that we need to listen to. And you have produced a series called The Unknown on the Glass Off Gang to share your testimony. And you are doing this to educate us and to warn us. And you're like the watchman on the wall sounding the alarm. Ani, in a few short words, tell us, what is the problem here? What is our threat to freedom? And why do you work so hard on educating us?
Problem is ignorance of people. Danger we're facing is Islam. And the reason I do what I do, I think I can say almost 24/7, is because I was raised under Islam in a strict Islamic country. Just quickly for your audience who may not know of me or have not heard of me, I was born and raised in Islamic Republic of Iran, also known as Iran. So no way around it. I was literally raised a full 100% Muslim woman, and I was in Iran until I was 15. So I lived it, I experienced it, I suffered under it, I was tortured under it, I was sold into slavery, sex slavery under it. So I know what it is, and I'm one of those people that is not going to turn a blind eye and just watch it happen.
You have summed up in a few words a subject that I am passionate about, and that is the way women are treated in Iran, the way that they suffer. I just finished a book with my Iranian friend called Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran, which educates people about the suffering of political prisoners and women. And you grew up under this kind of strict discipline. You were literally a child bride. Tell us about that.
Yes. And before I tell you about that, again, just to make sure everybody is aware of this, Islamic Republic of Iran has been named the top, basically the third most moderate Islamic country out of 50. So please note, All of this happened to me in the third top moderate Islamic country. Just imagine the 50th Islamic country is doing what to their people. With that being said, yes, I was a child bride. I was sold by my own father under legal terms in Islamic Republic of Iran as an adult woman to a man who was way older than me before I turned 14. At that point in my head, something was wrong, but the society, the country, the law, constitution, and my parents said, this is very normal. You're actually a little too old, because you should get married by age 9, because that is the law. As soon as you turn 9 under Islam, again, please don't confuse this. This is an Islamic Republic of Iran law. This is an Islamic law. A girl who turns 9 is announced a full adult woman. Now, could they marry you off before 9? Yes. But the husband isn't allowed to consummate the marriage until you are 9. Mm-hmm. Now, I was lucky they kind of kept me around until I was close to my 14.
The thing I want to point out to you, because you just gave the ages, you could have been married before 9. The whole model for this law is Muhammad himself. He married Aisha when she was 6 years old and consummated the marriage at 9. So the model for this law, being a child bride, goes all the way back to the Islamic prophet Muhammad.
Yes. And here's the thing. The whole consummate the marriage at age 9 goes back to Muhammad. However, within the Quran itself doesn't actually have an age, like none. It can be any age at any point, and it doesn't say you cannot consummate the marriage. It does tell you you're allowed to marry whatever age, but it doesn't tell you when to consummate it. The only reason age 9 came up is because Muhammad somehow managed to control himself until Aisha was 9 years old. The source itself is worse. Allah, the merciful, had no mercy on little girls.
This is why you're so passionate, Annie, about what you do, because you lived through it. You lived under strict law, Islamic law in Iran, and this is why women wear the chador, they wear the hijab, because according to the Quran, their testimony is worth only half that of a man. They have no rights. They are the property of a man. They can't even travel outside the country without the husband's permission. So a woman living in Iran, just because our audience needs to know this, has no rights, has no freedom. That's not too extreme, is it?
No. It's actually, listen, I always say sometimes you may not have a right, okay? But when it comes to women under Islam in any Islamic country, including Islamic Republic of Iran, it's not just you don't have rights. It's that you are enslaved. You see, there's a difference between not having a right or being a slave, being a slave. And that's what women are in Islam. You're a slave because when you're born, your father is your owner, called the male guardian. And then until you get married, then your husband becomes your male guardian. Anything you do, not just travel outside of country. If you want to go to school, I was kicked out of a school because my father did not sign my registration papers. And I can tell you, I was a smart cookie at a school, but they easily kicked me out of a school, denied me education because my father did not sign my registration papers. You want to have a job, you want to buy a property, whatever, except breathing and eating. Anything else you do as a woman needs a male guardian signature authorization on a paper. So it's when you say women have no right, it's not an exaggeration. It's somehow underestimating the situation. Because women are slaves.
Yes, you're exactly right, because this is the same situation in Saudi Arabia. A woman has a male guardian from birth to death, and they have no choice. In your situation, when you were given away as a child bride, you had no choice. In fact, in most Islamic countries, if a woman decides, I'm going to go against my parents' wishes, they end up being killed. It's called an honor killing. So in your situation, you had no choice. You had no voice in the matter.
Absolutely not. To this day, I still have a stoning standing against me in Islamic Republic of Iran. Because I left and ran away, I committed adultery by leaving without my husband's authorization. Yes, you're correct. If you decide to have your own mind or mind of your own and do what's right for you, one way or another, you are going to end up dead.
Yes, there are consequences because there is no freedom. You have no choice, but you made a choice one day. You found a way to escape this situation. This does not happen with every Iranian girl. Just like the girls in Saudi Arabia, there was recently a case of Rahaf who escaped. Her family's on vacation, and she escaped to Thailand. She got on Skype, and she yelled out, I need a country to go hide away in, and the United Nations came and took her to Canada. In your case, it was even much harder. You didn't have anyone to help you necessarily. You escaped, and you got free of the situation.
Listen, when I decided here's what happened. It's a moment. It's that one moment. You're like, if I stay, I will die. If I escape, I might die. I might survive. So you escape, because staying is definitely a death for you, for someone like me. I don't know how to bite my tongue. I'm not good at obeying my slave master. I'm not good at that. So I'll be killed staying. So let's go. But you need to realize, when I did it, there was no technology. There was no social media. There was no conservative counter-jihad movement websites. There weren't out there. I was pretty much on my own to figure this whole thing out. Nowadays, thankfully, there are so many different ways for survivors to get their voice out there, to get help. But when we did it, and I wasn't the only one. When I was in Turkey as a refugee, I do believe just my town, which is a little tiny town, border of Iran and Turkey, that little town had close to 5,000 Iranian refugees. They were either political refugees. We had so many Baha'i and Christian refugees who have lost everything, and they literally just escaped so they would at least stay alive. We had so many different cases of exactly lack of freedom, lack of humanity, that close to 5,000 Iranians were in that little tiny town that I was in.
Amazing. This reminds me of my friend Maral. When she escaped Iran and she was joined with a refugee group, they literally crossed the Zagros Mountains of Turkey, very stressful, very hard on them physically, and they made their way on land by rubber raft in the Aegean Sea, on buses all the way to Germany. And in your situation, how was that different in your escape? Did you have the same kind of privilege that my friend Maral did? How did you escape with your refugees?
No, my case was, I was basically with a group of four other people. We were smuggled out of the country it was a four nights and 3 days process, which is normally, if you get in a bus from Iran, from Tehran, Iran, until you get to Turkey, it's about 17 hours of drive, and you get there. But our situation was, you know, back roads and swim and run and hide and all that good stuff to get to Turkey. And by the way, as soon as we crossed border, that was it. There was no further we could go, because we were pretty much crossed the border illegally. So we had to go introduce ourselves to the United Nations. And that was it. That was the end of road. From there on was sit and wait. Sit and wait until your faith is, you know, announced by somebody. Now, my case, I had enough proof, and my case was so unique that it took so long for them to even come up with a law to fit my situation. I was an underage girl with no guardian. United Nations didn't even have a law to do what do we do with this? But most of people who made it there were already, you know, over 18, and so they could just go on, get their case rolling, and get going. But my case was, again, very unique situation. And also, even though I ended up getting my approval and my visa and my everything from America, I still had to sit and wait, because I wasn't even 18, and America couldn't even allow me in, because I didn't have a guardian in America, and I was underage. So they literally told me, you have to wait until you're 18. And guess what? Just a side note, I didn't go all crazy about it. I understood it. I sat back and waited. I didn't go, you know, breaking every rule in America to get in.
Exactly. This is good, because what we see here, we have an invasion coming to our border. Our president is threatening to shut down the border, and all the political opponents are saying, no, Mr. President, you can't do that because of trade and economics. But we have a president that is determined to protect our country. And you, as a refugee fleeing Iran, even at that age, was willing to go and do this the right way, Annie. Unlike so many other people, you have said in your testimony that with all of these invaders coming to our country and breaking through the borders, you're different. You're going to do it the right way, and it paid off because you were successful and you made it here because you did it the right way.
Exactly. And that's the thing. The reason I did it the right way is because I was coming to this country to have a better life. So I knew for a fact I better behave and not break the law. Because there is no better future when you're automatically coming in. First impression, I'm a criminal. And that's why I say I'm not assuming. I know for a fact these people aren't coming here to assimilate and become Americans. Because at the get-go, they're breaking the law and showing no respect. You can't tell me they're here for a better life or to assimilate or to become proud Americans to hold our flag up. No.
This is the danger we face. This is why there has to be a stronger system of vetting. This is why Trump has the temporary ban on. He's doing it for the safety of our country, and you're right. It's the way you behave. Immigration sees something in your past. Immigration sees something in you they don't like, they don't trust, and you can't be allowed in this country, and that's the right approach we have. Our country is open if you do it legally, but we're not a country of open borders like the liberals want us to be. But let me take you back to that moment when you stepped on American soil. Take us to that moment, what was going through your mind, what you thought, what you said when you stepped on soil and you knew that you were finally home safe and free.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay, first of all, when I did arrive, it wasn't actually finally safe because back then we actually had good, fantastic, amazing, high standard vetting system. So when I arrived, it wasn't that welcome to America, let's go. I spent about another extra 7 hours at airport. By the way, I went from Turkey to Germany to Miami. That's where that was the first time I ever put my foot on American soil. And I spent another 7 hours being vetted here in America. They did a footprint, handprint, fingerprint, eye scan laser, and they checked everything to make sure I am who they're expecting. And also had another interview right there, which was, I called it the mini citizenship interview. It was shorter than citizenship interview that I did, but it was still, what are you doing here? If there's a war tomorrow, who are you going to defend? But after that, when I finally got my paperwork, they handed me my I-94 visa, which is an immigration visa that never expires. I really, Randy, want to tell you how I felt, but I can't. I don't think there are words to express that feeling. It's first of all, there's so many emotions going through you. You feel free, you feel achieved, but then you're so terrified because it's like I was 18 when I came in, and it's like, okay, 18 years gone, I'm a brand new born baby, and I need to learn everything. From language to culture to streets to everything there is, you got to learn. And that is terrifying. Am I going to fail? Am I going to fit in? Are they going to accept me as who I am? Do I have enough IQ to, and don't forget, you come from someone like me comes from a country where every day you woke up to, you're half a person, you're dumb, you can't make your own decisions. Now you're let go in this free country to make your own decisions. They're like, oh boy, I only have half a brain. How do I do this? It takes you a long time to realize, wait, all of that was just garbage. I have a full brain. I'm a very smart person. I can make my own mistakes. I'm not going to get killed if I make my mistakes. But yeah, I'm sorry if I'm failing to give you a straight answer on feelings, but it was more than one feeling. It was so many contradictions in my feelings that I can't pinpoint. I know I was very proud. It was like, I did it. I did it. I'm still breathing. I did it. Where do I go from here? And I've said it before. The reason my show is named The Unknown is for so many years I was with an unknown. I didn't know where it's going, but I kept going with it.
Amen. You're here in America. You've passed all of these rigorous tests. You came in the right way. You are now here in the land of the free, the home of the brave, the Statue of Liberty. We all see that as immigrants. What are your plans? You're here. You've escaped a horrible system of oppression. You have escaped a family system that had you married off, where you were abused and tortured. You're now here in America. What are your plans as a young 18-year-old girl? What have you decided you want to do? Did you have a decision, or what did you want to do?
The very first decision was to become the best American Iranian I can ever be. That was the first decision. Mm. That was, hold on to your culture. Don't forget where you come from. However, grow into the better person you can be thanks to American culture. That was the very first goal.
This is excellent that you came here to assimilate. You didn't come here for any other reason other than the fact that you wanted freedom. You knew America was a place of freedom. You wanted to become the best Iranian American that you could become. And when I look at everything you have done since I've known you, and every task and project you put your heart and soul in, and when you go out and you speak, you are impassioned to educate us, Annie. When you look at America today, this is many years later, and you see the threats to our freedom, you see Muslim women on 9/11 now in our Congress, when you look at what is happening to our freedoms, and then you think back to Iran, you must be shocked and horrified, and that's why you are so vocal and outspoken, because you want to say to America, I know what can happen when Islam takes hold, and I'm here to warn you. Is that basically what you think about when you look at our country today? Is that the passion in your heart to warn us?
Yes. You see, as I said, the goal was to become the best American Iranian I can be. And that back then, I thought the only responsibility I will be carrying with me is to let people of America know what my people in Iran are suffering from. Did I ever dream that I have to also stop it from making my fellow Americans suffer? No. But 10 years later, it came to that. But today, yes, it's the matter of, hey, wait, listen up, people. My motherland didn't take it serious, and they are suffering. They have been suffering for 40 years. And when I say suffering, I'm not talking about lack of food, okay? Islamic Republic of Iran is by far the second most richest country in Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much saffron and pistachio and oil that they don't even know what to do with it. However, over 72% of people of Iran are living under the line of poverty. Because the government, the regime, the imams and mullahs take the money to themselves. When I say suffering, I'm not talking about lack of freedom for women so they can walk on the streets butt naked. No, I'm talking about women being fully covered or lashed for not wearing a proper hijab. This is what I'm talking about. And oh, by the way, fellow Americans, we're almost there too. Just saying. And that's why at the beginning I answered your question by the problem is ignorance. Because if people of America would stop, come out of their bubble, and just stare at the evidence, this wouldn't happen.
This kind of ignorance with the era of the internet, there's no excuse for it. We should have access to correct information all the time, but we decide to bury our head in the sand. Annie, our government, the Trump administration, just recently labeled the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization. Do you believe that there is hope that our government is taking a hard stand and now are going to do something for the Iranian people? Is there hope when you hear the government say what they just said about the Iran Revolutionary Guard?
First of all, let me say hallelujah to that decision. I think after hearing that President Trump walked away from the Iran deal, this was by far the second time that I could not help myself but to cry, and that was happy tears. Because, yes, not only they are terrorist group as far as training Palestinians and other terrorists outside of Iran to kill innocent people, they're also terrorizing the people of Iran within the country itself. And as far as, is that a hope? Yes, it is. If we knew for a fact President Trump is going to be in the office for another 4 years. Let me tell you why I say this. If next term, 2020, we have a Democrat elected, going to the office, the first thing they're going to do is remove them from the list again. And the problem with calling them a terrorist group is the fact of, okay, what do we do with them? Do we have the power to remove them altogether? Because that's the thing. Yes, they're a terrorist group. We can stop them from coming to America or any other country, but what do we do with them within Iran? Is United Nations going to take this opportunity and do a further investigation into them and remove them from power? We both know that's not going to happen, but that should be happening. So I hate to be the Debbie Downer, but I don't think this is going to go as far as we're hoping for it to go.
I do think it's a step in the
right
direction.
It's the right step. Yes.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, it's the first step. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, Annie, you well know, several years ago, the past president enriched the pockets of the mullah with the Iran deal and the sanctions relief, and you have just outlined what people live like in Iran. The past president empowered the Iranian mullahs. This president is doing everything he can, President Trump, to remove the power from the mullahs and empower the Iranian people. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He actually said it. He did say that he is with people of Iran, where Obama basically flat out said, I'm not with you. He is doing that. But again, it goes back to it's a perfect baby step toward the right direction. However, unfortunately, our President Trump, is so isolated, even within his own administration, that I can't really jump up and down and say, yes, we got one more terrorist out of the way, because he does not have the backing of the rest of people we need to continue on cleaning up all these. Because even the Supreme Leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, I said this before a few times, if anyone in power, including United Nations, the 5+1 power, any of them, would actually sit down for 5 seconds and look at the evidence in front of them, because we both know Islamic Republic of Iran's regime is not hiding what they're doing. And there's a reason for that, because they know nobody's going to touch them. But if they would, they would even remove the Supreme Leader of the country for terrorism and basically doing everything inhuman to the people of Iran. But the question is, are they going to do it, Randy?
That is a very good question. Well, let me just ask you something. It's been 40 years since the actual revolution took place in Iran and Khomeini seized power. I have gotten information from some of my sources that with the devastation of the floods now, and people are just so tired of the oppression. You saw the uprising of the Iranian people just a year or so ago. And now this is 40 years, and the Iranian people are suffering with the flood, with no food and no water in some places in Iran. There is a climate there that is ripe for uprising, and there are cracks in the foundation with the Supreme Leader. There is pressure between the hardliners and the conservative. Annie, I really believe that it won't be too much longer from now that this regime is going to crumble from within, largely because of the things I just said and because Trump has put so much pressure on them with sanctions. Do you see that happening?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. People are sick and tired of it. They are. Literally, about 5 days ago, the regime announced that they're not going to touch the religious budget in Iran to help the people who are starving and have lost everything to flood. They announced that. And by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, the Islamic Republic of Iran has 80% more religious budget than natural disaster budget, just so you know.
Wow.
80%
wow.
higher budget. And when I say religious budget, it's for Islamic schools, for Qom, where they actually educate their imams and mullahs, for building mosques, for sending money to Palestine. These are the budgets we're talking about. This country has 80% higher budgeting for that than natural disasters. That's why people are dying, starving. Those who actually survived the flooding itself are dying of starvation or freezing to death. And they are sick of it. They are tired of it. And they are trying to – but here's the bottom line. Again, I did this about 5 months ago. Even if right now, by power of Lord, the regime would just go away, what do you think is going to happen? Who's going to take power in Iran? Another Islamic group called MEK or M-E-K, because the liberals in America are backing them up. And thanks to Hillary Clinton, they were removed from the terrorist list. So now they're gaining power to take. I actually said it. I said, if my country, my motherland, is going to be ruled by MEK, I would prefer to keep the supreme leader that's in power right now. You do the math of who these people are.
Right. Right, and you mentioned something very important there, because Maryam Rajavi, the one who wants to assume the leadership or the presidency of Iran, she has this big 10-point plan for all this freedom. She assisted Saddam Hussein and helped him during the Iran-Iraq war. She has a very jaded past. You cannot trust what this woman does. And in an amazing way, I can't understand, Annie, why so many people in our government – are backing this woman when they should be backing the legitimate one, which is Reza Pahlavi, the son of the Shah, who is far more balanced and far more trustworthy. And yet, like you said, if this government falls and she would assume the leadership, you're right, it would be worse than as if the supreme leader was still in power. And people need to understand that.
Well, I'll tell you why they're backing her up. The same reason Carter backed Khomeini up. It's the entire greed and power. They want someone like Maryam Rajavi to run Iran because they want to have full control. What they don't understand is the same miscalculation they made with Khomeini, they're making the same miscalculation with Rajavi. The only difference between Islamic Republic of Iran's regime and Maryam Rajavi or MEK is the fact that Islamic regime of Iran right now are just Islamic people. Maryam Rajavi and MEK are the Islamic dictatorship regime. Look at their camps. Look at it. It literally completely reminds you of North Korea. They have all the same uniform. Have you noticed that? The way they walk, the way they talk, everything is dictated. You do it this way. There are, and I told people on my video that there are thousands of videos on YouTube about MEK members who escaped their camp in Iraq and gave testimony of who these people are. Maryam Rajavi orchestrated 18 attacks within Iran toward Iranian innocent people with bombings. That's why they became they were named on, their name was put in the terrorist list, because they terrorized people. They bomb so many places and killed so many innocent people.
And
but no,
of
course the liberals are going
to
back him up.
Right. Well, the key to all of this you mentioned that people need to understand, Hillary Clinton was responsible for removing her name from the terrorist list. And so all of a sudden her past is wiped clean and she's now trustworthy. But for someone like yourself that understands MEK, that used to live in Iran, that knows about how it works, you're not fooled by that whatsoever, because you're very aware of her past and what she's capable of doing. Even though she portrays herself as this great champion of freedom, there are alternative motives that she wants to rule Iran.
Exactly, and that's the thing. Most of my viewers, at least, they know better, because here's the very first thing. She is advocating for freedom. You all seen her wear her full hijab. She has never had a drop of makeup on, which will tell you that she is an obeying Muslim woman. She's literally the mirror image of Ilhan Omar. They both say they're advocating for freedom, but they're literally walking symbol of oppression within a free country. That should tell you something.
Yes, and this is the thing we need to point out to people as well. Khomeini promised all these freedoms before he took power. And as soon as he took power, he lied about it. And then once he took power, everything changed. Now, I want to shift gears just a second here for you, because you mentioned a name that we're all familiar with in the news media, and you've reported on this. Her name is Representative Ilhan Omar. She's with the Minnesota 5th District, which is really it's become another Dearborn, Michigan. It's an Islamic society. If you traveled there, I've been told, you wouldn't even recognize it as an American political district, because it's been taken over by the Muslim community. Ilhan Omar has done everything since she has been elected as representative of Minnesota to bash Israel and to talk against our greatest ally in the Middle East. And you have done a report on Ilhan Omar, and you have spoken out vocally against her. Tell us what you've said.
I'm sorry, what I said about Ilhan Omar?
Yes, speak to what you reported on.
Well, here's the thing. I can literally, to be honest, I can go on for 5 hours about Ilhan Omar. But let me have 1 minute to do it. Ilhan Omar is by far the sneakiest Muslim we have ever had trained in America to come in and sabotage us from within. Mm-hmm. Ilhan Omar is the perfect. I have always said that I was raised by a father who was a sheikh and a mother who was a Quran teacher, teaching other women how to be obeying Muslim woman. And I always in my head thought, I have never seen a more devoted Muslim woman than my own mother until I met Ilhan Omar. She is by far the most devoted to Islam, to Muhammad and Allah I have ever seen. And again, I come from a country with population of 80 million people, and it's a full Islamic country. But she by far has a mission. And here's Ilhan Omar's mission: to make sure to have enough power to further the Islamization of America to the fullest, to where America is actually the Islamic Republic of America. That's her mission. And funny enough, she's not even trying to hide it. Funny enough, she has announced every step of the way what she's planning to do. When she managed to lift the 181 years old ban so she could go to Congress with her hijab, the first tweet she put out said, "This isn't the last ban I'm going to get lifted." She announced it. She has said over and over that she will implement Sharia. She recently said what? She recently said Muslims in America should raise hell.
Mm-hmm.
Translation, time to start jihad.
Mm-hmm. The same
she
thing
recently
that Linda
said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, but the difference is Linda Sarsour is just the supposedly face of a woman's rights movement. Ilhan Omar is making laws in this country.
It's true.
That is terrifying. Linda Sarsour can go out there and scream and kick and make a scene, or even raise millions for care, but she can't make a law. Ilhan Omar can and will and is. That's a funny thing. I was saying to a friend of mine, I said the beauty of it is now Linda Sarsour is going to raise the money for CARE, and then CARE is going to hand it over to Omar, so Omar can turn this country into Sharia. It's a perfect triangle that nobody apparently sees.
And it's
What did she recently say about 9/11? Some people did something.
Yo. Wow, I was just taken back by that, how she downplayed that this was actually a terrorist attack. And she, like you said, she's very vocal in the media. She doesn't hide what she's saying. She comes right out and say it. In many ways, that statement tells me just how much she does not love this country, how anti-American that is to say somebody did something. It's horrible.
But in all fairness, looking at it from her point of view, she's right. Somebody did something. Jihad and killing non-Muslims is a very normal, regulated thing within Islam. So as a point of view of a Muslim, big deal. Somebody did something. They just did what they were told. It's not a big deal. That's my point. That's the thing. Stop. Everybody needs to stop looking at her as an American congresswoman. You all need to start looking at her as a Muslim woman. Then she will start making a lot of sense to you.
You have to have the right perspective, and you have to see things the way they really are. But Annie, when you think about it for a second, why would anyone elect her to that office, knowing her background as a Somalian, knowing the things about her? Why, Annie? And again, you said it in the beginning, ignorance, but why again? She was elected to that office. What's that say about us?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, it does say that we all need to stop worrying about being nice, and we all need to start worrying about being true American. That's number one. One of the main reasons, not just her, Hussein Obama, Keith Ellison, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and many other names were elected because Americans were so worried about being racist, bigoted Islamophobes. If we break it down, I've said this so many times. Islam is not a race. Muslims being against a Muslim is not racism.
Mm-hmm.
And Islamophobia doesn't exist. So let's just stop. Don't worry about it. Here's the thing. Next, when in 30 years, in 20 years, when your granddaughter comes to you saying, "Why didn't you do anything?" Are you really going to tell her, "Oh, I'm sorry you're wearing a hijab at age 7, but I didn't want to be Islamophobe"?
Mm.
Just say that to yourself and see how much sense that's going to make.
It's frightening. You just painted a reality that some people would say, "Oh, come on," but that is true. That can happen because here's someone that can write law, that can legislate, because she's in Congress. She can do things to change the law. So this is not something that is too far in the future. It could really happen. One of the most powerful voices in media, Judge Jeanine Pirro, the judge on Fox News, was silenced because she questioned Omar's hijab, talked about her hijab and being an American. She was suspended for 2 weeks. One of the most powerful voices in the media, which goes back to your point, how much power and influence this woman has.
And that's the thing. When you say it could happen, I'll actually say it will happen. It will happen. I go back to the same cliche I always say. Iran, Persia, was conquered by Islam with existence of one mullah in the Congress, one mullah. Shah of Iran allowed one Islamic cleric to be in the Congress. And with 2,700 years of history, it was conquered. You really think we can battle it? No. No, we won't. We have 51 Islamic Muslims in different positions all over this country. 51. Some of them the most powerful they could be. And if everybody doesn't stop worrying about labels, then we better just literally, I said this 3 years ago, I said, ladies, get your hijab ready, and gentlemen, get your beards going. We might as well go there. Because that's the bottom line. None of them have said to this day, none of them have said that I am here to make America better. Every single one of them, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, sit there and watch their speeches. One way or another, they're bashing America, and they're saying how much they hate America. They say it. They are ashamed of America. They are going to change America. All of those, they're saying it. I don't know why people aren't hearing it. Their mission is clear, and they're very vocal about it.
Yes. I'm so glad that you're bringing this up. We only have a few minutes left, but people need to hear you speak at length and talk about this. You have spent a lot of time in the last several years of going and speaking at different locations, churches, wherever, that people will welcome you so that you can warn us, that you can educate us, and that you will tell us the real story of what's happening. This year, do you have plans of speaking out, of traveling, of doing any more talks?
I'm so glad you asked that because actually, no. Many of the places I used to go and speak, most of them are not interested on doing it again. They have received so many threats. They have received so many labelings and hate. And that's what I'm saying. Instead of standing up and saying, you want to come blow up my church, be my guest, but you won't silence me, they dodge and let it be.
Wow.
So unfortunately, no, it doesn't look like I will have much speaking engagements going on this year.
We have settled for the lie of Islamophobia. We have settled for the lie of political correctness. We are so afraid. And Annie, you lived in a country that it transformed them in just a matter of several years. And you mentioned Persian history, how quickly Islam conquered the Persian Empire. It can happen to us. It's frightening.
Yes. And that's the thing. It's already happening. It is. Remember, we had an ex-Muslim Christian pastor, Iranian pastor Parsha, arrested in Minnesota for telling his story of how he went from being a Muslim to ex-Muslim to a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
That should literally wake everybody up, but apparently it isn't. It isn't.
I remember.
And let's not forget that Ilhan.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You were mentioning the story about the pastor in Minnesota. This is on American soil where we have First Amendment rights, and these were Somalian women. He was talking to someone about a testimony, and they interrupted him. And again, it's the Somalian women, again, Somalia in Minnesota, where Ilhan Omar reigns. And so I was just saying it's serious and it's sad that these things are happening.
Yeah, and then we have Ilhan Omar, who uses – she comes out, say something anti-Semitic. They get her to apologize, which she didn't mean a single word. Then they come up with the idea of doing a bill that goes, you know, you can't be anti-Semitic. Then she uses that bill to turn it into blasphemy law. And I promise you, 90% of Americans don't even know this is what happened. To them, come on, we're fighting anti-Semitism. No, we ain't. We're getting censored, and Ilhan Omar is working on actually doing Islamophobia bills and laws. Wakey, wakey. You read the bill, it's like, wait a minute. So she can say anything anti-Semitic, but at the same time, nobody can say anything bad about her connecting to 9/11 or Islam. That's the first step.
It is. There is a rally cry. There's a rally cry to have her removed from office. I had a guest a few weeks ago, Naren Nwea, who's an American Assyrian human rights activist. She works up in Washington, and she's on a committee to have this woman removed. So there are efforts being made, but we have to take action now. Annie, people want to know more about what you're talking to me today about, and they want to see the videos. They want to read the articles. Tell our audience about your page and what you feature there and what they can do to learn and be more educated about what you've said today.
To be honest, the best way to find all of my material is to find me on Facebook. Just put on Inos Annie Cyrus. My page will come up. Obviously, reading my material, watching my videos, and then sharing it out is the best way to get educated and make sure other people are getting educated. Also, we do put a lot of material up on AmericanTruthProject.org. That is a 501c nonprofit organization that I'm a national director of. Our mission literally is to stop all of this Islamization within America. We are literally trying to protect our borders. So AmericanTruthProject.org is another place they can go. They can get involved there in many different ways. And as you said, Glazov Gang, that's G-L-A-Z-O-V Gang. You can find us on YouTube, where we have close to 900 videos of myself, Jamie Glazov, many experts like Bridget Gabriel, Robert Spencer, Daniel Greenfield, Phil Haney, all these experts literally doing videos 3 times a week to put out information people need to hear and know what to do to fight this.
Amen. And you also periodically do a Facebook Live event. A lot of people join you and participate on that. Are you planning in the near future to do some more of those?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we'll do. And that's the thing, as I said, unfortunately, it looks like they're pulling the plug as far as my speaking engagement goes. So that will give me more time to do more videos and live feeds on Facebook. I mean, if I can't go on a stage and speak, I still have my phone and I still have my Facebook page. So I'll keep on talking. One way or another, I'll keep on talking.
I really appreciate your passion, Annie, your dedication as an Iranian American to protect our freedoms, to speak up for our freedoms. I think in this last hour, people have gotten to know you and know your passion and know your dedication, that you really love this country. You really care about this country, and I can see that in everything you do. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for educating us about what's happening and warning us, and there is something we can do to stop it. And I really encourage all of my listeners, please go to Annie Cyrus's page, sign up to be part of what she does, and watch the videos and be educated. Annie, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to educate us and coming on The Cross in the Desert.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you for having me again.
God bless you, Annie, and thank you, and have a great day. And I hope and pray that you will do this. Please don't just listen for this hour and say, well, I didn't know that. Please get involved in going to her page, be educated, sharing the material. You'll see it on my page today, too. I'll be playing this interview over and over again. It is so important for us to be educated. This is an Iranian-American woman that loves this country. She came here for freedom, but she came here to do something more than just enjoy her freedom. She came here to protect our freedoms and to be a voice for us. She is a genuine lover of the truth, a genuine lover of America. So please support her. And please be one that goes to her page and shares the things that she writes, because they're very accurate and they're very eye-opening and they are very educational. I want to say God bless you, Annie Cyrus, for being my guest. God bless you for those who listen. Please share this interview with all of your friends. I will see you again next Monday on The Cross in the Desert. Have a great, great weekend.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest spring, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the Lord.